Let's Talk Development, Season 2, Episode 7.
Welcome to the latest episode of Let's Talk Development, a podcast series by CDPR. We're going to discuss today climate change in energy sector in Pakistan. What is the path for greening Pakistan's energy sector? What are the challenges being faced in the transition towards renewable energy? And what are the potential solutions? Let me start by introducing myself and our guest today. My name is Amna Shahab. I've been working in the development sector for 20 years, and I have a degree in environmental economics from Imperial College London. Currently, I'm a partner in an environmental consulting firm called Samavert. We are working today on different policy issues, such as development of Pakistan's first integrated Pakistan Cooling Action Plan, in which we are supporting Ministry of Climate Change and Environmental Coordination. We've been working since 2016 with NECA and PECA, which are the federal and provincial bodies for energy efficiency and conservation, where we are developing appliance efficiency measures with them, which such as development of minimum energy performance standards and labels of appliances such as motors, commercial refrigerators and fans. One of Samavert's field-based projects is closely linked to the topic today, where we are greening the cotton supply chain through carbon insetting and providing energy solutions such as microgrids, clean cooking stoves to farming communities. I'd like to now introduce our guest today, Professor Noman Ahmed Zafar. He received his bachelor's and master's in electrical engineering from University of Pennsylvania. He spent a few years working at the electro-optic, magneto-optic labs at the university on development of a high-resolution frequency swept microwave diversity imaging system in multiple simultaneous bands from 2 gigahertz to 60 gigahertz. On his return to Pakistan, he joined University of Engineering and Technology, where he worked till 2000 as an assistant professor in the Department of Electrical Engineering. He then joined Techlogix Pakistan Private Limited as Vice President and Head of Professional Services, where he has been associated with software solutions and services and designed for 10 years in Pakistan, UAE, America, and China. His work of areas include understanding business needs, proposing and designing solutions, and carrying out development, rollout, and support lifecycle of the solutions in the domains of electric utilities, telecom, and manufacturing. He joined LAM School of Science and Engineering in 2010 as a full-time faculty member in the Department of Electrical Engineering. He is part of LAM's Energy Optimization Committee and is working on establishing a research base in the area of power electronics, smart grids, and renewable energy. His current area of interest include DC-DC converters for solar PV applications, DC inverters for grid-tied distributed energy sources, and variable frequency drives for industrial, off-grid, and automotive applications. He also worked with Pepco and various distribution companies in Pakistan to propose solutions for power distribution management and smart solutions for load management. All of that is obviously quite a mouthful, and we will later discuss actually what it means so that, it's easy for everyone to understand. So before we begin our discussion, I'll just set the context a little about what we think is the current situation. So while Pakistan is one of the most impacted countries for climate change, we're consistently rated in the top 10 countries, but our contribution is less than 0.7%. globally, where greenhouse gas emissions is concerned. And this has obviously led to our being very vulnerable to extreme weather patterns such as floods, droughts, and heat waves, which is impacted both food security and water security, as well as livelihood of the people of Pakistan. So what exactly does the energy system have to do with climate change and greenhouse gas emissions? I'm not sure how many people are aware, but about 75% of the total greenhouse gas emissions globally are from the energy sector. That's why it's essential for us to think of solutions where we can switch to renewable energy and start towards the path of greening our energy sector to prevent or meet the climate goals that have been set by our international agreements. A lot of countries are actually already doing a lot of work. Pakistan has also started. So about 80% of the global population live in countries where they're dependent on fossil fuel, especially imported fossil fuel. Pakistan is one such country. We are currently producing about 7% of our energy share through different renewable energies, not counting hydel in that share. So we have a target set for 30%, to reach 30% energy share for renewable energy, which does not include hydel, by 2030, according to Pakistan NDCs. So where do you foresee we are right now? Will we be able to meet that target? And what are the barriers that we are facing right now in getting to that path where we will be able to reach that target?
Thank you so very much. Again, for giving me this opportunity to talk about this topic, which is very close to my heart. I mean, I've been involved in this at LUMS for the past 14 years. And the last 2 years at TechLogix was also working with the distribution companies in enhancing their efficiency of operation and looking at various ways in which the operations can be enhanced to increase the overall efficiency and to conserve a lot of energy, which otherwise would goes to waste. For a country like Pakistan, which is a developing country, fifth largest in terms of population, growth-oriented trajectory. But at this point in time, we are part of the developing world, which basically means that our energy needs are expected to grow over the next decade and more, like other developing countries. And that's where the world is going to see a lot of increase in energy consumption. That in itself poses a lot of challenges. At this point in time, our per capita contribution to greenhouse gases is low. And part of the reason is actually our large population and low rate of industrialization, which if the country is to grow, these numbers are going to change. The good thing in that respect is that people are aware, the government is aware, the world is aware that the path that other countries could follow in the past, those paths may not be available to countries, no matter what their carbon footprint is at this point in time. For a developing country, that means that the risks are going to be higher, the costs are going to be higher, in terms of their industrialization efforts. And in that regard, I think opportunities exist globally where Pakistan can tap into those and move forward. With regards to the renewable energy contribution or the portion in the overall generation of electrical energy, we are lucky in one way that we have historically had a fair share of hydroelectric. But the targets are, as you rightly mentioned, 30% of variable renewable energy that is outside of the hydroelectric contribution. That, in my opinion, is a very challenging target for a country like Pakistan, where the grid is extremely weak, to say the least. And we do have a significant portion of the population that is not even connected to the grid. Increasing the contribution of renewable energy into the existing grid is extremely challenging. Even in developed world where the grid is robust, it has a lot of inertia. Adding renewable energy beyond a certain percentage requires technological measures which are at the cutting edge, and more research is happening almost on an annual basis to enhance the capability and increasing the share of renewable energies in the existing grid infrastructure. Main reason for the difference between adding renewable energy contribution to the grid and conventional sources of power generation lies in the inherent uncontrolled nature of the renewable energy sources. Grid generally does not have any storage, and as such, the matching of the supply and demand poses challenges. With renewable energy integration, we need to make sure that the inertia of the grid allows variability at the source site to be managed within the defined design limits of the grid operation. And if it doesn't happen, it can lead to blackouts, and these could be cascading blackouts, which means the entire grid can actually go down. Pakistan has various other challenges that maybe other countries do not directly face. We are a very longitudinal country. Our east to west borders are shorter, much shorter than the north-south borders. And that requires a lot of transport of energy from one end to the other. And that too suffers from seasonal variation in availability of the generation sources and the load centers. And that poses an additional challenge. We are a country that sees all four feathers, all four weathers. And that in some way is actually good for the country in terms of the variability that the country sees and the kind of crops and fruits that we can produce. From an electricity consumption patterns, this also creates a lot of variability. Our demand constrained supply varies from anywhere from 8,000 megawatts to about 30,000 megawatts annually. Compare that to a country like Malaysia, where the seasonal variation is low and their annual demand variation is between 18,000 megawatts and 20,000 megawatts. That's a very stable demand pattern. And that basically means that the provision of energy can be, electrical energy and power can be done in a much more stable manner, in a much more cost-effective manner.
Of course.
For us, that poses an additional challenge. And again, on top of that, when we talk about adding renewables, which not only have daily variation in the case of solar generation resources, but also has a lot of seasonal variation when we come to wind and try to integrate that into the grid. So the challenges are there, but again, for an engineer, challenges translate to opportunities. For us, I mean, again, it requires a more systematic approach, a design-oriented approach, a data-driven approach to decisions, where we can look at the problems, we can chalk out the paths to solving those problems and overcoming the challenges, and then look at our resources to see what approach, what trajectory would best fit the path towards a more greener, cleaner grid for the requisite energy and power provisioning for a growth-oriented commercial trajectory of Pakistan.
Professor Noman, thank you so much for the detailed listing of the challenges and what can be done about them. So in your opinion, which renewable technology currently has the most scope for adoption and expansion in Pakistan?
So again, in terms of the general global trends and the availability of various options, solar PV comes out to be at the very top in terms of the overall potential within the country. I mean, our demand is constrained. I mean, we now have excess generation, but the transmission distribution capacity does not allow all the demand, and other challenges that does not allow all the demand to be met. But if you look at the annual electricity consumption in the country, and we look at the total units, which is close to 130 terawatt hours, the amount of area that, when covered with solar panels, that can meet this generation energy capacity without taking... I mean, so the number I'm throwing is a wild number because, I mean, it doesn't translate into anything practical. But just to give you an idea on the potential of solar, is three quarters of the area covered by a city, a city like Multan. And that's a 26 kilometer by 26 kilometer area. Compared to the total potential in the country, that is not a very large area in itself. So that's the kind of potential we're talking about. Of course, when we talk about solar, the energy is available when the sun is there, and the sun is not there 24/7. So we need to harness the energy, have the capability of storing it effectively and then utilizing it like whenever the demand is there. So we need to create the requisite infrastructure to translate this into energy on the tap model. And that requires another potential area of growth for a country like Pakistan, and that is effective storage. And when we talk about storage, there are multitudes of technologies available. These can be electrochemical. These could also be geological when we talk about pumped hydro storage. And these could take on a host of different shapes. And depending on the application, depending on the energy and the power requirement, and those two are distinct variables when we talk about creating a solution, we can think about the kind of storage solutions that may be applicable. Again, in all of these, the most flexible and easily adoptable for a country with the requisite planning that goes with it would probably be electrochemical storage. And there we talk about the new age chemistries, lithium ion chemistries. We talk about zinc air. We can talk about sodium ion and a host of other potential opportunities. Not all are conducive for local manufacturing directly. All of these will require a parallel activity in the R&D space. Some of these we can intelligently design where the systems become independent of the underlying cell chemistry, and that would make it future-proof. So those are some of the areas that we are working on at LAMS.
LAMS Energy Institute is currently working on a project on DIDS, which is a deeply intelligent distribution system, which aims to match the demand for electricity with available supply using techniques such as intelligent forecasting of both the demand and supply. So can this actually lead to developing a cheaper way to solve the energy problem and encourage the shift towards renewable energy?
So in my opinion, this is a very good example of how the newer areas of technology and AI and big data can be used to remove the inefficiencies in the system, be able to predict with a higher level of accuracy, not only what the demand patterns would be, but to then optimally match it with the least cost generation that exists within the system. And with that planning, the operational costs as well as the capex can be reduced tremendously. And this again is not only an important tool in planning, but also in the day-to-day running of the transmission dispatch operations. And in that regard, it can overall reduce the overall cost of electricity, and which would result in the reduced tariff for the customers, which is a major need of the hour, not only because of the social unrest that it has a potential of creating, but also the industrial competitiveness of the country as a whole. So yes, again, the key idea is because the system does not have any storage, there is a requirement to match the demand with the supply in real time. And if we can predict it better, we can plan it better. And if we can plan it better, we can reduce the overall cost. And that's in a crux is the overall mechanism through which it can enhance the efficiency.
And I believe LAMS Energy Institute has already tested this in the field in several projects. And what are the results that you've gotten from there?
So there have been multiple rollouts. We've developed a tool for short-term and medium-term load forecasting in conjunction with CPPA and NPCC. And those have been in trials in these organizations. And again, allows the forecast to happen. And this is an important element for the move of the Pakistan electrical grid towards electricity markets. That's again something that LEI worked in conjunction with CPPA to bring together the entire power sector under one roof. The different entities could talk to each other, understand the capabilities and challenges that each individual entity would bring to the table, and then solve the overall challenges holistically rather than looking at it piecemeal, maybe optimizing a subunit and letting go of the larger optimization for the overall power sector as a whole. This is an essential ingredient of the electricity markets platform that Pakistan is moving towards.
So if we talk a little bit, Professor Numan, about the financing. So till quite recently, there were some, concessional loans being offered where renewable energy projects, et cetera, were concerned. But those have now been stopped. So how important do you think is the financing element for renewable energy to promote, to have such concessional loans available to shift the market towards renewable energy in Pakistan?
So again, here I'll take on a slightly more non-conventional stance in terms of the availability of concessions and subsidies and potential incentives from the government side. Mm-hmm. We all understand the fiscal constraints that Pakistan government faces. Mm-hmm. And in that, creating room for renewable energies is always going to be challenging. There are reasons why the government should still do it. Government is the only entity that can sort of catalyze a particular sector, irrespective of the financial gains, as long as it can benefit the people as a whole. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, any incentive from the government is most welcome and should be encouraged. But in my opinion, that should appear as the icing on the cake and not the cake itself, which basically means that when we talk about renewable energy, when we talk about solar PV systems, the numbers point towards feasibility of these over others without any government subsidy. And I don't mean that we should put additional tariffs and taxes, but if we talk about eliminating those and then also on top of that providing further subsidies, again, if the government can do it and if there's a requirement on the amount of renewable energy that we want in the system, we need to structure it right, and we need to look at the overall potential that renewable energy brings to the table. In my opinion, the cost which is quoted over which the government provides subsidies, the actual cost is even higher, because the cost of integrating renewable energy in our existing system depends on other generation sources for stability, which basically means on its own, it is not capable of fulfilling the overall requirement that it promises to cover. For example, a case in point is the net metering regime, which was introduced to encourage people to take out their own financial resources and add renewable energy and then integrate it to the grid. And in that, essentially, people use the existing grid as an electrical storage system with zero cost and 100% efficiency. And this is, again, does not exist in reality when we talk about renewable energies requiring this kind of a backbone. We have done the analysis, and in my opinion, even if we talk about renewable energy and its potential without grid, even then it is more viable than the current rates that people pay when they're connected to the grid. And that itself is a number, a data point that sort of signifies the extreme potential that renewable energy technologies and the battery storage technologies, the current state of the art, has a potential of providing to the people. That does not take away from the upfront costs involved. Mm. And that is the barrier.
Yes.
If the government can support in reducing that, and again, if there are ways, in a country like Pakistan, if there are Islamic ways of financing where the upfront cost can be distributed over a longer period of time, where it becomes an annuity-based model. I think that is where what is going to be a game changer. And in my opinion, the potential is even higher than the kind of disruption net metering regime in Pakistan has currently resulted in. The past year has seen an unprecedented growth in the amount of solar which has been imported and installed in the country. So again, if the government has to spend whatever fiscal space it has, I think a more intelligent way would be in indigenization of technologies, in not burning the hard-earned foreign exchange, in import of technology where the case for the local demand can be established with a high level of accuracy and then can be planned in a very systematic manner. And then the production planning can be done according to that. And these are things that, I mean, again, are at a level where if we talk about individual industry and the government not being on board, we end up with a lot of roadblocks for the industry. If the government, without spending any additional money, can make sure the process is smooth and the encouragements are there for people to invest with the safety, security of a continuity of policy, which Pakistan severely lacks, that's when I would feel that the investment in the private sector would be mobilized and the results would be much more stable and accurate in terms of their deployment for the country.
Thank you. So picking up on one of the points that you mentioned, if we talk about trying or improving our production capacity for solar PV panels in Pakistan, because right now, obviously, most of them are being imported either from China or Germany. So what is the capacity that we currently have and how long would it take us to actually reach a level where their efficiency would be comparable to the panels that we're importing right now?
So once again, I mean, it's a decision which requires a mathematical analysis, a sound mathematical analysis to look at. When we talk about existing capacity, we have none. When we talk about local assembly of PV panels, we do have a few players. We have more of those players coming in. But when it comes to manufacturing of solar cells, the kind of investment it requires is huge. It's humongous. We're talking about a clean silicon-based manufacturing facility. And even then, it's highly risky because there are in parallel various competing technologies that are being investigated, and those would mean a radical shift from the technology that currently exists. Mm-hmm. Having said that, one of the reasons why the efficiency and solar panels is so important is if there is an area constraint. But I've already mentioned that for us, the annual production can be done in an area of 26 kilometers by 26 kilometers, which basically means that for a country like Pakistan, we have this opportunity where we can enhance our production capacity and we do not have to, I mean, if we can start at the cutting edge, we'll be leapfrogging the areas in the middle. But even if you're not right there at the very top of cutting edge, if we are able to take out some of the prior technologies and install them in Pakistan and maybe at a reduced efficiency can still provide a lot more value to the country as a whole and then would allow the fiscal space to grow the technology to maybe compete and then exceed what the current state of the art is in the world.
Thank you. So what other new technologies is the Lum Energy Institute working on?
So we work on battery storage systems and we also work on the load side in managing and running the loads more efficiently. Okay. In my opinion, both of these, along with the generation capability through solar PV, for example, provide a golden opportunity for another segment. I'll talk about the areas and I'll talk about the area that we can address. So when you talk about the battery manufacturing, again, like solar panels, we rely on the underlying atomic unit, lithium ion cells, being an off-the-shelf commodity item. When we talk about its manufacturing in Pakistan, there is a potential, but it may not be possible without a partnership. And it would not be a technology transfer partnership, but a technology partnership.
Okay.
And the reason is that the current state-of-the-art batteries, lithium-ion batteries, the supply chain is primarily controlled by only three countries, and that's Japan, mm-hmm. Korea, and China, mm-hmm. predominantly China. Again, therein lies an opportunity where Pakistan, being fifth largest country, 50 to 80 million people that do not have access to grid electricity, and this is a segment I'll talk more about. The UPS systems, the mm-hmm. solar systems, the telco, the infrastructure which is required that requires a backup system provides an opportunity, a huge opportunity for battery systems to be implemented. Again, there is an upfront cost associated, but we work on, at LUMS, we work on cell chemistry independent solutions. We work on IoT-enabled battery as a service model system. We talk mm-hmm. about energy as a service model. And part of that work spills over into our swappable battery-based systems for e-mobility. And that, at its heart, at its core, has swappable batteries, which contribute to maybe 50 to 60% of the total cost of the vehicle itself. And in that, if we are able to attain self-sustainability and create cutting-edge technology solutions that can overcome many of the challenges required in to be overcome in the mobility sector, that's when I think the local e-mobility sector would actually take off. In terms of the load management, we talk about monitoring solutions. We have energy monitoring capabilities and a spin-off from LUMS that actually does that. We also have controlled operation of motor loads, where we can run them from batteries, scale down UPS systems. We can also run them directly from solar panels, even without batteries. And those are the capabilities which are required to serve our underserved community, 50 to 80 million people that are not served by the grid itself. Again, those are areas where this population segment, which compared to Australia, which is 10 times the size of Pakistan, and one-tenth the population of Pakistan, about 26 million, we're talking about a segment of society which is 2 to 3 times the size of the total Australian population. And without electricity, we will not be able to bring them into the productive folds of economy. So energy provisioning and doing it in a scalable, modular, sustainable manner mm-hmm. is one of the, again, key areas that we research on.
That's really interesting to learn that LAMS Energy Institute is working on so many cutting-edge technologies. It's very exciting to hear about it. And well, we talked about energy sector as a whole, and we talked about renewable energy. But I think we cannot ignore energy efficiency and its importance, because that's something that no matter what we do, without transitioning towards more energy efficiency requirements, appliances, building codes, etc., it is impossible to move forward where Pakistan is concerned. I actually wanted to come back to the renewable energy target that we have mentioned in our Pakistan's NDCs 2021. And we touched upon this briefly in the beginning as well. So we have a 30% target share by 2030. So how realistic do you think that target is, and what do we need to do to actually reach that?
So my opinion is not something that many people are going to like, but in my opinion, the target is very steep. So in all probability, we'll miss it. I mean, that's the first point I would like to bring up. Having said that, I mean, it's still our responsibility to actually try to fulfill the commitments that the country has made. The way we're going about it, in my opinion, is not correct.
Okay.
Because we have a weak grid, and our major thrust is in trying to meet the numbers by looking at grand projects that get added on top of a weak grid, and that destabilizes everything. Mm-hmm. And the cost and price points are not something that the country, the power sector, can sustain. The kind of contracts that exist in that domain. If I were to look at it, I mean, again, in addition to maybe other solutions, my focus would be on serving people who are not even serviced by the grid. And that's where the major potential lies. Because either the government is committed to all its people or it's not. And if it's committed to providing electricity, not as a luxury, but as a basic necessity of life, then these 50 to 80 million people have to be served. Mm. When we think about serving these people, serving them from the existing connected grid is close to impossible, even if Pakistan had a lot of financial resources to burn. But this, again, creates an opportunity where if we can come up with scalable modular systems that can have a bottoms-up approach of creating a grid, rather than looking at a centralized system, if we look at a bottoms-up approach of distributed system that can be aggregated and connected to form microgrids, and these microgrids to be then connected again and have a potential of being connected to the grid without rendering them obsolete. Mm. That is where I feel we can go. At LAMS, we work on connected microgrids. We have three villages near Multan that we're already piloting in. And there we can control and monitor the overall operations from LAMS. These villages at different levels of sustainability are actually financially contributing to the electricity that they're getting to a level where if, for example, the electricity goes down, they actually are proactive in calling us and asking for the problem to be resolved, and they are willing to pay for all of this. They have a local technician that is hired on a regular basis that manages and maintains it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And if a bigger problem occurs, the technology is homegrown. Mm-hmm. We can service it from here. We can monitor it from here, from Lahore. Multan is not very far. Of course, it costs a lot of money to go back and forth. Mm-hmm. But that is something that we have taken as part of the responsibility in servicing the grid and making it work.
You're absolutely right. I mean, examples like that are essential. We need to provide access to clean energy, especially to those of our communities in off-grid areas. And I mean, the number, 26% of our population is without access to electricity. That's not taking into account the population that's actually based in weak grid areas where, they have intermittent access to electricity. So the scale of the problem is quite large. And you have suggested one really good solution. And I hope that, there are more and more people who take those up and take those solutions forward.
And again, as a fundamental concept, we again assume that any funding and support would be icing on the cake. But the initiative itself should be self-sustainable. And the local community should own it and be able to run with it to create their own local energy microeconomies.
Exactly. If they have if they're willing to pay and they have the capacity to pay and they can manage their own operations and maintenance, that would be something that can actually be very easily expanded across Pakistan so that those communities do have access to clean energy.
I'll just like to end with two things. One is an example from Gilgit-Baltistan, which is naturally endowed with another kind of renewable energy source. And we talk about micro-hydro. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of micro-hydro stations that are working there. Mm-hmm. And the only problem is how it's structured. And when we talk about helping a community, there is a possibility of an endowment or a funding that comes once and the system gets installed. But keeping it operational in a sustainable manner requires not just a sustainability-driven tariff pricing model that the community owns and sort of adheres to, but it should be a growth-oriented model. So Skardu is the largest city, and it sees energy availability at mere 2 to 4 hours a day. Although, again, it's at the center of a lot of renewable energy resources. And the reason is that the price of electricity is very cheap. So people can buy electricity at 2 rupees to 5 rupees, maybe up to 8 rupees a unit. That's all they have to pay. In my opinion, that is something which is stifling the community rather than helping it. The low price, people feel that it is something really good, but it's actually bad because it does not allow enhancement of the infrastructure. And people are now stuck with what is there, with its breakdowns and inefficiencies and other ways in which it cannot service the population as a whole. But they don't have the capacity to enhance it. And they're dependent on external resources to come and help them out, which again is not sustainable. I mean, while the rest of the country is paying a lot more, it's not that the GB should pay equivalent to what the rest of the country is paying. But if they design it, if they work on a model where their tariff structure would allow a continuous growth in the infrastructure, they would reach a level where it could actually provide a sustainable provisioning of power and energy. The situation is bad. And bad, I say bad because, I mean, you can't even put a number to the cost of not having electricity there. We visited the district headquarters hospital, and the doctors mentioned that in the operation theater, if mid-surgery electricity goes out, they have to pack the patient up without completing the surgery. And that essentially means that you are on the brink of losing the life. I mean, how can we put a price to that? How can we say this is how much it costs? And again, the solution for that is not very, very extensive. But again, the generator-based solution, fuel, getting the fuel all the way up to Skardu, again, is a huge challenge, the price and everything. And then the operational challenges around managing and maintaining and running a generator. So we talk about renewable energy, storage-based energy solutions in those communities. The second point is another idea that we're working on, which hopefully we'll be piloting soon, where the swappable batteries, which are used for mobility, we're now working on a solution where the same battery packs can be used in the model of energy in a canister. So just like LPG cylinders, you would now have electrical energy and power in a portable battery pack.
That's so interesting. And then
what we're working on is adding different types of converters on top that are demand-oriented and can service different kinds of loads. These could be DC loads like in DC microgrids. These could be fixed-frequency AC loads that are used in households or in general stores or community centers or maybe schools. And these could be variable-frequency AC loads that are used for motorized applications like water pumping, fodder chopper, rice mill, flour mill, and other applications that actually can generate revenue for people.
So, Professor Numan, what would this be connected to, the swappable canisters that you're talking about? What do you connect them to?
So at one end would be a swap station, which is the source, which is again has its own source, which would be renewable energy based. And there we're talking about agri photovoltaics. So using the land for dual purpose. And once these canisters are filled up, they're available. People can come on need basis. They can come and rent it, take it, use it and return it.
No, I understand that it can be charged and given to people. But, you know, I'm just trying to imagine what it would physically look like and what it would connect to.
So I can again, after the podcast, I can take you to the lab and I can show that to you. So there are five components to this. So we have the generation component. We have the swappable battery component. The third component is what we call a battery cradle. Mm-hmm. So that's the container that would hold the batteries, and it contains the IoT, which enables the pay-as-you-go model. And then we have the swappable batteries, and then we have the converter modules that go on top. Okay. These five modules, these five components together form what we call, at this point in time, we call it the energy food transportation nexus. So it enables that. Mm-hmm. The best part is our preliminary analysis tells us even if we buy these components and put a reasonable margin on the purchase price from the cost element and then service it to people, the cost of providing electricity to people comes at 65% of the cost that people are paying when they're connected to the grid, which leaves a 35% margin. That's actually a 65% margin over the cost for people to use it as an energy microeconomy, energy delivery service.
That's very useful.
Yeah.
Especially given the rising prices of electricity, the people who are without access to electricity. So, you know, the cutting edge solutions that LAMS Energy Institute are working on, they're very inspiring and we hope to see them on a larger scale. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for the latest podcast of CDPR. And I hope that Professor Noman's words were very useful and inspiring for everyone, as they were for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.